our shuttle lot and just had to have angry visitors go home unable to find a place to park. The zoo fiscal year ended last June 30th with a record attendance in the year. We had 1,226,000 visitors to the zoo.
Morning.
An all-time record.
The Senate Revenue Committee.
The zoo.
We have,
so far this fiscal year there have been 4 months
bills
that were all-time record-breaking months for us. So this year I imagine pretty easily it's going to be another record-breaking attendance year for the zoo. Attendance is just increasing at the zoo.
And,
the parking problems we face
like
are only going to get greater, not less.
And
with the Children's Museum opening June
30th,
one of my biggest problems to deal with is buying places for folks.
So we'll ramp the committee to 308,000
enough.
The
members don't want. We really do have an awful lot of people coming. I have to think about 2,000 yesterday on a weekday in March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and I appreciate
the
opportunity to come back before you to talk about another change to the Oregon College Savings Plan. This has been a very successful beginning for the state in helping families save college.
Thank you.
Just simply, this is a bill to allow Oregon to take all the money that comes into this account from a state perspective and apply it towards college. It would do basically two things. It would remove the state taxes on the earnings in the plan, again, allowing Oregon to use the full amount of money saved from a state perspective to apply to college educational expenses. And it would also provide us an opportunity to move forward in our marketing plan of allowing us to discuss a tax-free benefit long-term. I've been in the process of working with our congressional delegation. In fact, Senator Wyden has introduced legislation in Washington. I know there's some other bills in Congress to also take federal taxes off this plan. To remind you how this works currently, it is a tax deferral. Money put into
the Representative
plan.
We have
the money grows. It is not taxed until it is taken out. And then it is taxed
over any number of ways.
Rate.
We have worked with
typically
some of the people,
the beneficiary,
and others as well.
So therefore, it's a tax deferral allows the assets to grow more quickly.
A nightmare.
This bill
try to come up with a system
say that state income taxes on earnings
they
not be taxed.
It doesn't
and
impact our
therefore would give
and
that portion of the savings
burden
back to the investor and applying it directly to college. We've had great success already in attracting well over 3,200 investors in this plan.
Visitors.
Nearly $8 million have been placed in trusting us, and I feel that this would be an extremely positive step forward
and
in making
on
good plan, a great
and
plan.
Responsibility.
And again, the underlying goal for all of us
never
in the state
to be a
is to help Oregonians have an ability to put money aside for educational expenses. And as you all know, that has become a growing challenge for many, many families and individuals to reach that dream. And this is one tool to help families throughout the state do that. I'd be happy to answer any questions. This had unanimous support in the House. The chair of the Revenue Committee on the House side put the beginning of the effective date in for January of 2003.
35
tax
year.
And again, I think this is a very good and responsible measure to help Oregonians have an opportunity to save for college and really give them even more bang for their buck.
But I would think, in terms of these entities, Metro Zone webpage, you look directly to the zoo, or how do you get to the zoo? It's all directly on a drive there. And then,
currently, I think it has been, as mathematically as I just described, about $2,000 per individual that's being put in. I think as we go forward and really push on marketing this plan, working with companies, doing today, which we do have a budget for, you will see that number grow. As you recall, there are no limits. Let's just say there's basically no limits per year except for an overall cap for beneficiary of $150,000 you can put in this plan. The $2,000, as you recall, we have a state tax deduction
off
the state taxable income of the first $2,000.
I don't have things
that has been a very attractive feature as well. So we know from our experience talking to those who put money in, and anecdotally, just personally talking to folks who come up to me about this, it is the tax benefit that really has
the
incentive
these people here. So we're going to get a lot of short trips in Portland.
that has been not only our experience, but nationally as other states have a similar plan that has been a very attractive feature. And the long, long resort here is we're trying to create a plan that will not only help our state, but really look at the long term that this will benefit investors and really create a vehicle that will make Oregon a very attractive place for investors.
Negotiate. I think that's why we're sitting here today. Is because of that.
Further questions,
Chairman? Representative Hill, I can obviously sense your frustration on this matter, which maybe is shared in this the question of breweries, people in the media are in the neighborhood and in the Highland-Sylvan area, or are they talking about people in the region? I don't know if the folks from Hildenborough came to you and said, I want to be able to park at the transit station or people in the media neighborhood. I think the frustration you actually have is the same frustration that I have about the system altogether, as I mentioned to you, and that is inadequate parking rights all throughout the system, including the Sunrise Boulevard. The other thing to remember as far as investment, because those people of the region have invested in that zoo. We recently, the zoo, the Forestry Center is a private entity to which there are private corporations.
House Joint Memorial 12.
But in our case, there's a $35 million capital expansion in that facility to really try to give people the sort of things that Tony was talking about for community activity to see what's in nature. Is really the primary purpose of that particular facility. As I mentioned to you, when we started, I was somebody who way back said, I don't know if this is the most, but it's there, and we should do. Now, as far as compromise goes, the question then is who gets the permits? And if you want to make that available to everybody in the region, and they all get there before 7 o'clock in the morning to park to do their citizen ride, they're going to be taking up space that later would be used for people who are trying to use the facility.
And
the
federal
Most people commute early in the morning or late at night, and they're then blocking people who are going to be coming up to facilitate the activities that are using up there or who are later going to come up to the area. So that's the problem we're running into. Do you charge
American households?
If you do, the market rate for downtown parking generates $34 a day now.
$6 billion.
So there's some issues with that. Federal government revenue. How do you monitor that to make sure that people are not using the facility when we make those decisions? It's hard to raise on your own. It's a sunny day, and a lot of people will show up up there that may not account for. So there are some real issues there that we have talked to the community about. We've talked to TriMet about additional space. I think we're going to testify to that. Not additional space, but additional transit services up there. I think that's the thing that needs to be discussed more, and that we certainly be supportive of.
Providing more telecommunications to schools and internet access.
I'll give open to everybody. We make choices all the time in terms of regional, small, so I don't think in terms of an argument that, the region,
notwithstanding,
so therefore, we should all get there. We have federal dollars in here. We can make that argument all day long.
This bill should pass.
But I think it's really talking here about regional issues. We make those
permits. It's not a sponsor.
Those permit parking in neighborhoods. They have a program.
I happen to be in Washington.
So I think in terms of, I guess, what I'm looking for.
About a year
during the Spanish American War.
No.
There was a
reenactment.
If it were
in a park in front of
an abject disaster,
as a capital,
get rid of it. But in terms of nobody's tried,
they were debating this very issue
and
a year ago.
I don't think any of us are up there trying to.
And they had the
taking
period uniforms
and park and ride
marching.
Is there a reasonable approach that we
making
go out and try this?
A presentation.
If it works, if it doesn't work,
a plea.
Don't do it. I mean, I'm well aware of what your requirements are to operate.
This is very interesting.
All around the region.
Why shouldn't we make
this area in this country? But how can we make this work?
Just very interesting that I happen to be there at that one day.
I'd like to comment on the idea that
all
in
red uniforms
is a little unfair. Mark Reed has pointed out that because of concerns, and one of the compromises was that Memorial Parking Lot, less than a block away from the zoo parking lot is available for nighttime use of
living proof that once an active
this,
never goes
just a couple months ago, I was with Jim Ivansey, the president of the Sylvan Neighborhood Association. We tried a pilot project where we would make the lot available on certain nights for people to see Blazers games. So we tried that. We're willing to talk and to try things. Yeah, this picture that's been painted of, we've just said no and we're not willing to talk, is a little unfair, I think. The permit plan, it's something we didn't try because we looked at the paper, we looked at what problems it was going to cause. We tried to work through those problems and couldn't even get past the point of, let's take this to an on-the-ground test. The problems were such that we never got to that stage.
So far, you still have to draw a line. And the people on the far side of the line
I would say
are going to be mad. The people on the near side of the line are going to be mad when they still can't park because we felt we needed the space.
That's a memorial.
Ultimately, we end up
we're in work session
on
HM,
in a position where everyone's mad at it. And that the costs to administer this are significant for us. And it's not
there's a motion on the floor. Is there questions on the
particularly
motion?
Particularly for us.
Is there objections?
This is not our mission to provide
so ordered,
and
Senator
I think the transit for the neighborhood, something that does work.
We'll end the work session on
HM. And we would certainly be supportive of that.
I'm betting
I'm going to
debate on this.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Prayer. And I do have one quick question. Yes or no?
Presentation.
Is this from TriMet or
the next
from Metro or from the zoo? Who does it come from?
You have the appropriate staff questions.
Who security provides that warning to people that we observe using our rail and
after warning? You need to get near the microphone, please.
Provided by the zoo security and after some number of one, I think it's three.
Martin Maher will present an orientation on Hospital 2033.
Is it, number one, I don't know how they
Chairman
know
and
they
committee
get
members,
to. Number two,
with Hospital 2033
number two
in Ingross,
is that
what you have
very irritating
is a bill dealing with agricultural
processing
no and even a tax credit.
Let's put that out.
And just to give you a little bit of background on this, during the 1999 session, we had Senate Bill 595 that was passed by legislation and it was vetoed by the governor. And what that bill did is it provided a property tax exemption for machinery and equipment used in winemaking for wineries sited on ESU land. Bill that passed through the houses and then was vetoed by the governor. This then instigated a interim group during this last session, and it was led by the Department of Revenue, which discussed some of the agricultural processing issues and tax policy. And primarily, the interim group focused discussion on the property tax system. And then the Department of Revenue did, at that time, survey counties to identify some of the agricultural processing property tax accounts and the values of the machinery and equipment and personal property of the agricultural
processing.
So, basically,
at
during the interim, there was a lot of work done to really bring about this
project.
Bill and kind of get at what kind of policy should be a good incentive for agricultural processing in the state. Under current law, the machinery and equipment that is used in planting and growing in the harvest scheme are exempt from property taxation. But machinery and equipment that is used after the harvesting operation is used in processing then is valued and it is taxed. And with House Bill 2033A, what it's doing is it's going through and it's establishing income tax credit or a corporate tax credit if the taxpayer is
a
corporation for the machinery and equipment and the personal property. There's two different categories, real machinery and equipment as well as personal property that's used in farm processing. Now, there are certain conditions that need to apply, and the reason why these conditions were outlined is because the group felt like it was important to target on-farm processing, target some of the smaller processors in the state. So what the conditions are is the machinery and equipment must be located on land which is specially assessed for farm use,
low density,
contiguous land which is specially assessed for farm use.
So it's a challenge for us.
And it has to be owned and operated by the farm operator. And that machinery equipment must be used primarily for processing once and in the processing, it has to adhere to one of the following conditions. There's two different conditions for the actual farm operation.
area.
The farm operator has grown or raised at least one half of the total volume of the farm crops or livestock products that are processed
We've also
with the machinery and equipment in three of the last previous income tax years. Or the farm operator has grown or raised at least one-tenth of the total volume of the farm crop or livestock products processed with machinery equipment for which the credit is claimed in three of the last 5 years, and the farm operator uses the machinery and equipment to process at least one-half of the volume of the farm crop or livestock products grown or raised by the farm operator in three of the last previous income tax years. The point is, again, to try to get and capture and narrow the number of processors to those who are growing their own crops and processing their own crops. And so then the amount of their credit
with the station
is computed by multiplying an effective property tax rate, which is something that a farmer could actually calculate and receive himself from his own property tax statement. So he will take the total property tax divided by the assessed value from his property tax statement, and that will be his effective property tax rate. And he multiplies that by the adjusted basis of the qualified machine and equipment. And the adjusted basis is something that he will have from a worksheet that he has to prepare each year for his income taxes.
And
so, again, this is a credit that was designed by this interim group in order to be able to allow the farm processor to do this work all himself. Having the county report to them on what are the property tax or what are their property tax rates, the property tax rates and things they can get from the property tax statement. And the adjusted basis is, again, something that the individual farmer will be calculating each year for income tax purposes. So they just multiply that effective property tax rate times the adjusted basis of that qualified machinery equipment. And it may not be all of their machinery and equipment, so they will have to identify which machine and equipment is used in the process.
The critical issue there is how many spaces you want and
so this tax credit then is carried forward for 4 years.
Secondly, how would
the tax credit is not allowed if the machine and equipment is fully depreciated for tax purposes. So that's another criteria we'll be identifying what year this machine and equipment is in the depreciation schedule and then identifying how much the tax credit is going to apply for tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2002.
The problem is that they don't know
basically
that the
listed, there is no local revenue
and once
loss,
there,
and that was a major part of the discussions during the interim group.
Where they're
going to
go.
There wasn't,
they don't have
that local governments will
have
harmless, but what you do see is state revenue impact, and this is on the basis
that
of the amount of tax credit that there will be for
the
various
probably
agricultural processors
anyway,
in the state.
Arriving early in the morning.
So this, the revenue impact is estimated to be a reduction in state
those
general fund revenue of $509,775 in the 2003 year and $1.48 million in
2003 and 2005 biennial. I think it's just too attractive an option for
this.
And that does put somebody, either new or fourth center, or find that in the undesirable position of having to ticket them or code them. And we've done that on occasion where we have to park fire hydrants and blocking access, but it is a very contentious issue, and the commuters are not happy about it. And I think it would be worse in this instance where you had folks who had a legitimate permit thought they were parking at the right place at the right time.
I'm going to have to close the hearing, and we're going to have to adjourn the meeting because we are now under a call.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. It applies to a variety of
I'm going to make a very brief
There's no constraints on that. The constraints are on the processing
and
the farm operation meeting those very volume requirements. And one last point with this, too, is you have to carry forward for 4 years, and that's why you're getting an increase in the future because we have made some assumptions about
So with that, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3540, and I'm going to adjourn. Thank you.
Packing, meat packing operations, slaughterhouses, or how it applied to the growing nursery business.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Byer, those are processors that are in my database, so yes, they would be able to apply if they meet these volume requirements. I mean, again, you've got just a certain portion of the farm operators that will be able to, you know, qualify if they do some processing themselves.
So if Foster Farms were to establish a slaughterhouse and get half of their chickens that they processed on the same site, their equipment manufacturing operation will qualify that.
Senator Beyer, with that scenario, yeah, you just have to think of what, it's just the processing equipment that's going to get the tax credit.
Right.
So it's not any other machinery equipment that would have been used for farming. It's just the processing equipment. And then you have to look at what is the portion that they're processing on their particular site. So, yes, if they're processing and they can meet, you know, 50% of the total livestock that's raised is also processed, then that they would meet the criteria.
The limitation that's coming, that would back into this would be limitations in land use that prohibit processing on exclusive farm use designation. In other words, we get fairly tight limitations on what can be done in terms of manufacturing on exclusive farm use land.
Not if it's ag-related.
We had a big battle about bottling water in one case, and I'm sure there are some places where we will see
that's new
expansion proposed
water.
As a result of these
raise it.
Senator Minnis?
I assume this needs to go to Ways and Means.
Senator Minnis, this, like other good bills that we have before the committee, will be heard here in public hearing, not go to work session, be parked until after the revenue projections are released on the 15th, and then probably come in a flurry of excellently considered legislation that will go then to the floor. But Ways and Means chairs will help direct where these tax credits would be approvable. So we're basically bringing them over, establishing the substantive hearing to bring them back after the May 15th Revenue Committee meeting. And they would go directly to the floor.
Given that scenario, then, it seems to me that I'd like a little bit more research on who this is supposed to apply to. It seems to me that it should apply to smaller farms, smaller agricultural interests, rather than large manufacturing companies.
Point well noted. Senator Minnis, I think you'd find that virtually all the wine processors would fall into this. I think probably anybody that's doing a relatively small processing of fruits and vegetables certainly would qualify. But also, you know, if it goes all the way to the scale of commercial slaughterhouse, then you got to know that.
Mr. Chair. Assuming the revenue impact is...
Excuse me, I interrupted Senator Minnis.
Well, I was just going to say, I'd like to see if we couldn't get committee staff to look at some amendments that would limit it and at some level that would seem appropriate. It seems to me the policy is good if you're really trying to encourage small farms, preserve small farms, and help them become more entrepreneurial. But if they grow to a level that they're very self-sufficient, they're doing well, then I would question whether the tax credit should go.
And Senator Minnis, I see at least two representatives of ag producers or farm organizations, and I would encourage them to talk to Senator Minnis about what applications they see. And Ms. Martin Herr, we've got a request for information and a possible preparation of amendments, so I would like to ask you to work with Senator Minnis on that.
Okay, can I just...
Absolutely.
Okay, just Senator Minnis, just to address that issue, just to make sure you're clear, this is just for, you know, land that is specially assessed, so they have to receive that special assessment. So, like, a lot of large processors would be on industrial land, so that kind of thing does, you know, exclude a lot of the larger processors. And then they, like I was saying, they have to meet these volume requirements, and they have to be, if they are specially on specially assessed land, the only other way that they could qualify is if they were contiguous to a EFU or specially assessed land.
Understand, but in that case, my amendment, if there was one, probably wouldn't do any harm, would it?
Senator Minnis, no, that's fine. I just, if you want to kind of, if your idea is to tighten up maybe the language as far as making it just specially assessed farmland, or I guess I just, if you could help me clarify that, it could be later.
Sounds like a hallway conversation. Mr. Vice Chair, and then Senator Starr.
I'm just noting the size that's projected of the tax. It's, you're not talking about a lot of big people. It's not very much money.
And Senator Starr, did you have a question?
Comment. Following on to what Senator Minnis has proposed, I'm wondering, like those operations that have grown in Senator Minnis's backyard, from what was a very small farm operation now is a very large commercial operation at Trailblazer Farms. They started their processing on what was really their farm, now are processing multiplied millions of dollars of product. But their operation has been ongoing for many years now, at least 25 years. Would not most of that machinery be depreciated so that there is no limited effect?
Senator, I would say you're right, probably would, but the other thing is they have to, under the principles that are embodied in this bill, produce at least one-half of the total volume of the farm crop on land that they own.
One-tenth if they're processing more than half of their own crop.
Right.
And in this case, I'm sure they would qualify because they are very large growers themselves. But I don't know that we don't already have enough limitations here.
Yeah, along with that, the assessed for farm use clause. They're probably an industrial operation at this point. But I think that's the very issue that Senator Minnis brings forward.
Yeah.
You raise an interesting question, though. Is a co-op, a cannery that's owned by a co-op, would that be a facility owned? Because they, all the processed foods that they process are generally from their co-owners. And they usually are sited, many of them, at least I can think of two of them that are sited adjacent or contiguous to AgLab. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just
saying.
Yes,
there's one other, I guess, interest that I'm familiar with. I think it's close to your district, if not in your district. That's the old property that's owned by the state of Oregon that Boeing was going to put some form of research or manufacturing plant there that's now becoming a dairy processing plant, and they're putting those cows on those thousands of acres, and they're going to process right there. So, but it's not a small operation by any stretch of the imagination.
I think you're referring to the relocated Tillamook Creamery. And the associated growers that will grow the milk products and process. But I think there's vastly different ownership patterns. The folks that own the land are growing feed. They're selling the feed to the folks that will be raising the cattle on leased their own land, and then the Tillamook processing is happening at a different location. So, but let's look at that. Elizabeth, if you could help us noodle through those details, I think both Senator Starr and Senator Minnis bring up good points. And when the bill comes back, it would be after the 15th, but if you have the information and the research is available, please distribute it as soon as it's available.
The other thing we might consider is a sunset. Let's see how it's used. See who's using it.
Speaking of sunsets, is there any other testimony to be offered? I see we have a list of folks that signed up. We will call forward Mr. Conklin, Mr. Lyon, Mr. Lurch, thank you. These are folks from the American Wine Growers Association. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Conkling, and I represent the Oregon Wine Growers Association and was involved in the work group. I just want to make an introductory remark and then turn it over to Bernie and Jess to give their testimony.
Okay.
50%.
They're selling the feed to the folks that will be raising the cattle on lease for energy and the filament process.
Increase in feed.
So let's look at that.
And increase in feed, my guess.
Senator Starr.
Administration and.
And when the bill comes back, it would be asking the people to have the information and the resources available to distribute.
I still feel very strongly that I thought that the $10 that we saw that we treated retroactively to July of 98.
Is any other testimony to be offered? I see we have a list of folks to find out. We will call forward Mr. Conklin.
To get us through,
Lyon,
and in particular with the downtown Lyon, market, to have this additional, what's contributing now, the remainder of the
association,
additional 50% increase.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Conkling. I represent the Oregon Wine Growers Association and was involved in the work group. I just want to make an introductory remark and then turn it over to Bernie and Jeff to give their testimony in support of House Bill 2033. A lot of work groups, in my opinion, don't produce very much. This was one that's quite the exception. The Department of Revenue did an excellent job facilitating the work group and producing some very useful information. Our local government partners came to the work group in a very constructive manner, and I'm extremely pleased that we produced a result, first off, but I think in addition to a good result, this is a viable, useful incentive, and moreover, the process, the tool that you have before you might also be a model. I think others can speak to that better than myself, but I would like to recommend the work group effort and the outcome to you. As very outstanding, and some of the people from the Department of Revenue who are involved are here today, and they deserve applause. I also would like to note that as we're looking at these issues, agriculture in the West and in our state is struggling. The state of Washington is also looking at ways to provide incentives for their agricultural interests. I just have today something from the Capitol Press that indicates the Washington House is moving a bill 1906, which provides a state property tax exemption for machinery and equipment. In other words, they're dealing with the very same question that we have here. It's trying to remove the disincentive from small farm operators to invest in the kind of equipment that can help maintain and increase the viability of their farming operations by doing on-site processing. So I think this is a very timely exercise. It's something that we've worked on for three sessions. I think that we're at the point of near perfection, if not perfection. Always make a good idea better. In any case, I certainly recommend your support of House Bill 2033. And with that, if I may turn it over to Bernie for his testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you very much for doing that. I'm an owner-operator of a commercial orchard and commercial winery/vineyard in Hood River, Oregon. Bernie. I'm here representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association in support of House Bill 2033. I'm also joined by Jeff Lyon, who
would
be a legal counsel.
Immediately eliminate the previous amount.
House Bill 2033, as Gary has already pointed out, represents the consensus reached by
whether or not we have to refund
facilitated by the Department of Revenue, which included local government representatives.
OWA
is very appreciative of all the construction work that this group
has been increased.
The work group was formed at the direction of Governor Kitts. The governor, Robert Atkins, vetoed a related narrower bill last session. His veto message, the governor said he was interested in creating an incentive for farm operators so they conduct more value-added activity. I think that's an increase. The value-added aspect that hopefully will generate more income and make farms financially viable. That it's also a very important consideration under the trying times we're in today. We also wanted the incentive to apply broadly across many commodity lines without eroding the local tax base. We feel that House Bill 2033 meets these objectives, provides a state income tax credit that offsets growth of property taxes to farm operators pay on machinery equipment used for on-farm, and I want to emphasize that, for on-farm processing
activities.
House Bill 2033 includes eligibility criteria that ensure farmer operations process and processors who farm qualify for this tax credit. Its provisions apply to all types of farm operations,
because
not
we have so many.
Processing activities are increasingly important to the vitality and even survival of Oregon's farm operations.
In terms of trying to raise these only out of legislation,
we believe this modest incentive will encourage more investment by farm operators in non-farm processing. That will increase farm income and help preserve the family farm and farmland. There is an additional property value that generates local property tax. The combination of farming and processing will help farm operators stabilize the workforce and offer continuing rather than just seasonal employment opportunities. OWA encourages your support of House Bill 23 with
that.
And I just want to add one further thing.
These particular fees, I certainly appreciate
it's a challenging time right now
for
Oregon agriculture.
Our best
we are looking at ways
to these fees,
keep our head above water.
One could have
I think value added is clearly one of the most important things that we can look forward to doing in the future. I personally am having both an orchard operation, which is constantly in a tailspin. I'm struggling very hard to keep that operation
relatively short period of time.
I need to have some value added operation.
Certainly will work
and
very hard to try and
I'm looking at expanding both of my custom crush facilities right now, but frankly, the equipment purchases tied in with the tax base that I have to follow through for really discourages that kind of investment. And we are in an extremely capital-intensive industry, and I hope that you'll recognize that a modest tax incentive like this can carry out not a lot of weight for a small farming operation.
And in this instance, we're approving retroactive fees that are actually costing Oregonians money.
Things that you have in mind,
I see a disconnect, and I'm looking for some guidance to reconcile that.
We're probably on with my operation, just the winery operation, I'll talk about that. We're looking at something in the range of about $1,000.
Set in place, 1995.
Other questions from
in the Senate
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff Lyon. I'm an attorney with Davis Wright Tremaine. We represent the Oregon Wine Growers Association. I appear on the association's behalf today, and we also I participated on the work group who was involved in putting this legislation together. Bernie talked a little bit about the policies and practical impacts of the bill on his operation. I'd like to provide just a little bit more detail about how the legislation works. In order to efficiently promote on-farm value-added processing, we, in the work group, in drafting sort of this legislation, look to create a fairly narrow scope of whom it might apply. And the first thing I'd point out, it only applies with respect to machinery and equipment that is already subject to property tax. And so, for example, the large dairies that were discussed earlier, if you look at the list of exemptions from that property tax, dairies involved, and then there's another number of other industries that have received special exemptions already from the property tax. So that would already be outside any revenue impact of this bill. And that's actually the method that was considered earlier by our industry in 1999, and now we're moving to a more broad-based credit package to avoid the industry-by-industry carving away and come up with a consistent policy to encourage this kind of activity. So the machinery and equipment that the bill addresses is only personal property and fixtures. It doesn't apply to any buildings or structural components of buildings. It's only equipment used in post-harvest activities, no retail sales activities. So again, in our industry, winemaking equipment, bottling equipment would be subject to the credit. Anything in a tasting room, say, for retail sales activity would be included. I think a similar model would apply in the nursery industry. Then if you move on to section
three subsections. There's essentially an eligibility checklist for who may participate. And first, it requires taxpayers who are engaged in actual trade or business of farming, and that's the cross-reference to the Revenue Code, Section 263A. And then in Parts B and C, the taxpayer must use that equipment for processing activities, as Elizabeth pointed out, on land that is specially assessed for farmland or adjacent. So again, we think this is a very significant limitation because large processing facilities start excluding the allowable range in farming zones. And there's both square footage limitations on that and some other limitations on that that I think put most of the items that you'd be concerned about outside that range. And in subsection D, we're looking for processing activities that support a taxpayer's legitimate farming business. Again, so we're talking about farmers who process, not processors who might incidentally be determined to raise some crops. Again, producing at least 50% of the total volume of processed products, or producing at least 10% of the total volume of processed products, as long as that's one half of your own farm production. And we think that these ranges are important because it recognizes that in many industries, a farming enterprise is subject only to the available land there at the area. And if we do have a grower, say in our industry, a grape grower who is particularly successful at his winery enterprise, we don't want to discourage that person from growing their business either by purchasing some additional grapes from their neighbors or providing some custom fresh facilities there. I think the policy remains the same. You're encouraging farm-related activity by farmers in rural Oregon that will help bolster that economic base. Section 4 of the bill provides a phase-in of the volume test, again recognizing that when we have new growers getting engaged in on-farm processing initially, they won't have necessarily the relative production history to substantiate their eligibility. So we want to make sure that we're giving this incentive right off the bat or to encourage new investment and new on-farm processing. And then, of course, once the records are available, they have to be kept to substantiate eligibility and kept for 10 years for audit purposes. So that, if you apply all of those tests, it really limits the scope of who would be eligible. And then if we look at how that amount is calculated, the tax benefit here is a state income tax credit in an amount roughly based on the property taxes that would be paid on that qualified machinery and equipment. It's impossible to tell exactly because the items aren't broken down on property tax rolls exactly what that number is. So we've worked within the work group to do our best to identify the methodology for how that is created. So the credit is computed by taking the effective property tax rate from the relative account from that taxpayer, multiplying that times the adjusted basis of the machinery and equipment, and that adjusted basis uses items from income tax statements, is adjusted further for current year depreciation, and then adds back any amounts expense on the initial investment in the property, because assessors, when they're out putting a value on property, don't know and don't particularly care whether for income tax purposes the growers have expensed those amounts. So this is accomplished to give our best calculation for what the actual property tax paid would be on each of those items. And then, of course, once an item is fully depreciated for income tax purposes, the credit would no longer be available. So that's a quick run through of the bill and it's how we've designed it.
It's attachment 5.
Sorry, there were a series of amendments made in the House.
And the industry has proposed House Bill 3088, which increases journeyman license.
Mr. Chairman, most of the amendments
We're actually have a suggestion of Department of Revenue folks who are very helpful both in making sure we are using consistent definitions already and consistent information already available for income tax purposes. And this does two things. It makes it much easier for the processing of this credit by the Department of Revenue. It makes it much easier and apparent for taxpayers to work through the credit checklist and worksheets would be made available. So it provides some consistency, reliance on existing definitions, and is an ease of application.
No, it's on permit fees, excuse me.
I would just add one other point. Also, by using these calculations, we're not requiring local assessors or local governments to provide any other additional information, so there's no cost or no burden on the local government.
A 25% increase is a pretty significant increase. And I objected to it when I came, and now I'm looking at the comparison.
Let's call forward Tom Schoenberg and John McCulley.
They can only affect the, or this increase will only apply to the programs that they run, which are
the real
programs.
Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Don Schoenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau here today in support of House Bill 2033. I, too, was a part of the working group. I appreciate it very much. Working with the group, it was a long haul. We had a lot of issues to overcome, but it was successful, and we certainly give our support to what was finally developed. Just a few comments, you know, support everything the previous people had indicated along the technical nature there, but one point I would like to make is you do have to have a tax liability in order to take advantage of this tax credit. Right now, that's pretty difficult. Agriculture is like a 20-year low right now economically. And just last week, Director of the Department of Agriculture, Phil Ward, was speaking at the Farm Labor Housing Forum at noon. And he used some figures. He indicated that agriculture produced $3.4 billion of farm gain income. During the last year. He also said, and he didn't connect these two, but I sure did in my mind, that the farmers spent on inputs, supplies, labor, et cetera, $3.4 billion. What does that tell you? Put two and two together, you get zero in that case. So as an agricultural industry, farmers are operating on their equity right now. Now, this is going to vary individually, of course. There will be farmers who have the ability to take advantage of this, but it's not going to be everyone. And if a farmer decides to go into some form of processing on his property, and if that happens to be a successful operation, that's going to produce other revenue income for the state. Now, this is not just money flowing one way. There's going to be money flowing into the revenue coffers of the state as these operations become successful. Finally, a third point, all producers, agriculture producers, don't have the ability to go into a processing situation. In our particular case, when I was in a full-time farming situation, we had our own prune dehydrator. There were not very many around. Recently, we sold out, but it recently burned down. Now they are rebuilding. People came in and testified at a hearing yesterday regarding the reestablishment of that dryer because it's needed in the area. Every farmer can't afford to build his own prune dryer. And or cherry dryer in this case, they dry many. So it's not only something for the individual, but it's a service to the agriculture community as well.
So it's no urgency that was competitive with any of the jurisdictions around us, and we were unable to retain.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John McCulley, representing the three fruit growers.
Secondly,
here just to add my voice of support for House Bill 2033, and also I think to express appreciation to the Oregon Wine Growers Association for their leadership on this issue. They've really done a masterful job over the last couple of sessions. pulling all sorts of sectors time, disparate parties together to come to what I think is a very reasonable solution to this issue.
That the, division
the fruit industry would be able to participate if they ever reach profitability again. And some are. I mean, there are some people who are probably doing pretty well. There are cherry growers who are packing their own cherries. There are apple pear growers who will pack their product as well, many of them to do some initial processing before the product goes to storage. So there are opportunities here for them to take advantage of what is being offered here. And
those are the major elements that are tied
the committee to approve this.
74%, I believe, of our
are there any,
personnel related.
Additional questions?
Just the cost of keeping qualified inspectors on staff.
And what we have before
and the cost of supporting their activities.
Washington County also has a higher cost of living.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colleagues, we will.
Rural communities. I mean, all we're doing
hearing by
is raising
any
cost
persons that are present. Would we testify on this issue? If not, we'll close
now.
The public hearing.
One little thing.
We'll bring the issue back after the and I believe that concludes our hearing for this morning, but I will admonish the witnesses.
I guess if it were, you know,
had a question about whether this was available.
That somebody should have noticed that
large
the program was
more effective,
and more expensive, and done it maybe incrementally.
You ignore that question.
Just to raise it by.
Thank you. He was adjourned.
A lot all at once.
Madam Chair, can I respond to that? I think the issues that we deal with are timeliness. It's expensive. It may raise the cost of a home, but having a contractor sit around for 2 or 3 weeks waiting for an inspector to get there raises the cost of the home even more. The other, and we've talked about this before, raising a fee, a huge percentage, instead of coming in every couple of years with a fee increase. And I'm hearing two different things. Representative Butler didn't like for us to go from 20 to 30 to 40, which is raising it incrementally, and yet when we do make a big jump, that's not accepted either. So I'm a little confused on whether you want us to raise these incrementally every few years or if you want us to take big jumps.
Debbie is, when it comes to raising fees, that one of our jobs is to question whether or not you really need the fee increase.
I absolutely agree, Senator Deuce, and that's why we're here. But we're trying to make a case that we have managed these fees, I think, responsibly and professionally over the years. We respond very quickly to our industries, and these fee increases are a result of that, and that's why we bring them in front of you so that you can take them.
Chair, there are two other options that the deputy director doesn't mention. He mentioned incremental fee increases and massive fee increases. There's also the status quo and fee decreases. And in an age of technology with computers and efficiency, occasionally you would think that these could be decreased.
Madam Chairman, Representative Hayden, we have decreased fees over the years, and we've got we can bring back that information. When we had high ending balances, as Don mentioned, we decreased the manufactured housing fees. We decreased the plumbing fees. We did decrease the boiler fees. Electrical fees went down at one point, and now we're at the end of our ending balance. What you see here is just a portion of our fees. As I said, the Building Codes Division alone has more than 500, so the rest of those fees are staying static. So I think we are making use of all four of those options.
Debbie, with everybody's permission, what I'd like to do, if it's hard, if we go back to the fee bill and see if we can finalize that. And Senator Dukes, when we go to the Senate Bill 5507 work session, we'll have you address your concerns there.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just real briefly, there are other fees besides building code division fees on this fee list. You'll turn to page 506. You'll see that there are some fees related to the insurance division program. And I wanted to draw your attention to a couple of fees or fee changes in the middle of that page, which actually do reduce fees because they change the renewal cycle for insurance agent licensing, just to show that there are times when fees are decreased downward or fee structures are changed that reduce costs to those people paying the fees. I just wanted to point that out. And there were on the previous page, there's a fee at the very, actually very top of page 5 that relates to the collection agency program. So those are a couple other fees that are not related to building codes that are on this list.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the remaining fees for building codes, division, finance, and corporate securities and the insurance division, and those other fees, with the exception of the state code for development training and monitoring fee increase relative to manufactured dwelling program fee, which is scheduled from $30 to $40, which is effective sometime on or after 10-1 double lot.
You've heard Representative Butler's motion discussion. Representative Hayden.
Just to comment, Madam Chair, that it's a striking figure that there are 500 fees for this one division and hundreds of divisions with, I suppose, hundreds of thousands of fees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Carry on.
That's true for every stock on the wall.
Yes, and Representative Butler, I believe the director mentioned that if you wanted to make that motion and then have them come back to the emergency board, would you add that to your motion?
I beg your pardon. Yes, Madam Chair. I neglected to add that that we would like to have them a budget note to include the return of the agency back to the emergency board in the interim, with a complete analysis of the building codes, and perhaps that would be in relationship to some of the other charges, central services charges that are presently being worked through as well, so that we could at that time have a report from the deputy director and or the director and staff relative to the overall fee structure, and if the building crash continues, then we'll just have to monitor it at that time as well.
Correct. Thank you, Robin. You heard the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved. And now we'll go into
Is that the last of all of the issues, Madam Chair?
On the
5508? On all of 5508? We've cleared everything else up. Madam Chair, if we've taken care of everything, and I'm going to, I just went through it this morning, but if legislative fiscal office says that we've taken care of each one of those items, I would move now that we move Senate Bill 5508 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair. When you're ready for discussion.
Discussion.
I do have one question on the pawn brokers program fees. Both of these?
Yeah.
And was there a third fee?
No, there's just two.
Oh, there's the audit fee.
The audit is statutory. Okay. Well, it's not statutory.
There's a fee on outstanding loans. Is there a fee on inventory?
No. We've backed both of these.
Okay.
Right.
On the record.
Yep, and both of those have been backed out by prior motions.
That was my question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. We'll stand at ease for a second.
Yes, Madam Chair, recognizing that we will get back to electrical, which is a separate federal issue, my motion is that we now approve Senate Bill 5508 as amended, and with a due pass recommendation to full ways and means.
Discussion. Objection. If not, so moved.
And now we'll go into Senate Bill 5507.
We need to do whatever it is. It's going to be really scary. We're
slowing the scary.
Make him do it.
Representative Hayden, we want to represent that. We're so eager. Someone is not present. Oh, boy.
You'd like to do that?
I don't mind. I have strong feelings one way or the other.
So.
Bless your heart.
If it succeeds, fine. And if it doesn't succeed, okay.
Representative Hayden is going to carry it to full committee. Okay. Butler is going to carry it in the House. And Senator Dukes will carry it in the Senate. Okay. Now on to Senate Bill 5507. I hope the committee will forgive me for not taking a break because I know the House needs to go at 10:30 with their excuse, but we also don't want to keep you here too long. And let's go back to Senator Dukes' concern and let's discuss, let's see, do we need to have LFO's recommendations first? Or anything from, where are we?
Madam Chair, why don't we go ahead and deal with Senator Dukes' issue and then we can work our way through.